Saturday. It's May 23rd, 2020. This is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the rainy Chicago suburbs. On this day in 1983, Radio Moscow, I guess you pronounce it Moscow, announcer Vladimir Danchev praised Afghanistan Muslims for standing up to Russia, and he was immediately removed from the air. In 1984, on this day, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, second in the film series, directed by Steven Spielberg, produced by George Lucas, and starring Harrison Ford, opened in the U.S. Okay, that's enough trivia. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to visit and subscribe to Spingola.com, SpingolaSpeaks.net, ScreeningSandyHook.net, and during the program, please email your questions or comments to comment or comments with an S, comment at Spingola.email. I invite you to visit our chat room, which is Spingola.chatango.com. And I especially invite our guests to the chat room where they may interact and post extra information or whatever they'd like to post. Our guest the first 2 hours of today is W. Craig Reed. He is a U.S. Navy vet, a submariner, diver, and special ops photographer during the Cold War, and author of Spies of the Deep. He also wrote Red November, Inside the Secret U.S.-Soviet Submarine War. His website is wcraigreed.com. Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. And your website is very interesting. And I was looking at, and you say, The Seven Secrets of Neuron Leadership. That kind of intrigued me. All of your books are very intriguing, but could you talk just briefly about what's in that book?
A lot is in that book, actually.
Well, I'm sure there are. There is.
But throughout my military career, and then afterward, I stayed in touch with quite a few really fantastic military leaders, the former Deputy Secretary of Defense, SecNav, and also another SecNav and CEO of NASA, are in the book. One wrote the foreword of the book. But I spent years as a consultant working for a number of very large and well-known companies and noted a lot of really wonderful leadership capabilities and skills, and also noted a lot of areas where we had some issues. And I was noticing that neuroscience was coming down the path and not being used readily or quite as well as it could be in leadership circles. And there weren't any books out really on that topic, not too many. So I decided that one was needed. And that's what prompted me to write the book.
Okay. You also say on your website, what's next after the coronavirus? and that is all that we hear about. I haven't had my TV on since March 28th, so I don't hear a lot about it, but I keep up with it on the internet, of course. I pretty much know what's going on. But what is next? And you have a new book. It isn't quite out yet. Spies of the Deep, The Untold Truth About the Most Terrifying Incident in Submarine Naval History, and How Putin Used the Tragedy to Ignite a New Cold War. And it got me to thinking about Putin and how long he has been in charge of Russia. We've all seen him bare-chested, riding a horse and all that stuff. But he's been in office for, how many years?
Almost exactly 20, actually, just a few
21?
Months over.
Yes.
20 years and just 2 months.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are unaware of the, well, I was unaware of the submarine incident. And could you talk to us a little bit about your upcoming book? It's supposed to be out when, in July?
That's correct. It is out for pre-order now. It is available, but shipping in mid-July. And I think what a lot of folks don't know is that before Putin was elected in August of 99, he only had about 2%, according to the polls, of the vote. That month, the Russian submarine Kursk went on a top-secret mission and got in very close to an aircraft carrier we've heard about in the news recently called the Theodore Roosevelt. That's the one we've heard about with all the coronavirus incidents going on. And they were actually able to sneak past all of our defenses and get a firing solution on that aircraft carrier. Well, they came back to fanfare. Putin met with the CO of that submarine. And then he actually went down to the pier, met with submariners, became an honorary submariner. His father was a submariner,
really?
By the way. Yes.
And that's all it took?
So what he did was he leveraged that mission success to say to the public, this is what I will do if I'm elected. I will bring our military back. I will bring our submarine Navy back. And I will then spur jobs because of that.
Oh.
And he surged to 53% of the vote in March of 2000. That's what got him into office. And then when that submarine went down, he leveraged that incident to propel himself even further into power.
Wow. Yes, now you replace Boris Yeltsin. But that is incredible how people, I guess the Russians are as naive as anyone else, right?
Well, they were not in good shape financially at that point. Russia was just above a third world country, and he, rightly so, turned it around. Give him credit for that. But he used a lot of underhanded techniques, and he basically wrested control from oligarchs and took control of the oil and gas and energy firms, put billions in his own pocket, and then propelled Russia to a new superpower situation, and now has brought us back to really a Cold War that's about to turn hot, that's far worse than the last one.
Wow. Now, did any American have anything to do with this situation? Did he receive assistance from anyone here in this country, politicians?
He did, actually. And so
yes.
What happened was because of incidents that happened during the so-called rescue attempt of the 23 survivors aboard the Kursk. They went down in August of 2000, and they refused help from the West, but a lot of the facts got buried. And also one of the key facts is that we had two submarines right there in the area, spy subs, and it's very strong possibility that one of them may have clipped the Kursk or came very close and may have been involved in the incident. All of that got buried by Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton. And
oh, he hid things? Clinton?
Yes.
Actually,
hard to believe, I know, but in New York they
amazing.
Met about a month after this incident, and so all of the military and political folks in Putin's circle were hammering for retaliation, and that all got squelched. And then Dick Cheney, who was running for vice president of the U.S., his firm, Halliburton, actually
right.
was involved mm-hmm. in helping the Russians with new technologies and new capabilities to do the salvage operation later that year. So we were heavily involved all the way through that, and now today we're paying the price for it.
Now, is this part of the Project Hammer?
That was one of the projects involved. But one of the key things that we brought to them that they did not have was what we call saturation diving. And that is using helium oxygen and being able to go deep. they had lost that capability. We used it during the Cold War. I wrote about it in Red November to wiretap their communication cables. Well, our U.S. firm gave them that technology back and trained them on how to do it. And now we're fearful they're going to use that to not only tap our communication cables, but perhaps even cut them.
Wow. And I think that people just think, well, they're so focused on other things going on in our own community, the United States community, and elsewhere, that they're probably not thinking of political takeovers or political intrigues at this time, right?
Well, that's correct. And unfortunately, our adversaries are counting on that. So they're counting on us being distracted. And right now we have pretty concerning situations. Our Navy, of course, has gotten hit pretty hard. And so we're not at full speed. And our adversaries know that. Russia, China, obviously Iran, and North Korea all know that. So we have to be very wary of what moves they're going to make. But this could play into Putin's long-term plan. He has some agendas, and he sees this as perhaps an opportunity to make a few moves here and there that we might have previously countered, that we're just not in a position to do so today.
Mm. Now, what is the story behind the Russian Trump collusion and all that stuff, and Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, certainly allowed the sales of some very significant product or resources, assets. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct, and a lot of this was self-serving. You have to draw the line back to the dollar. So those in control of various different projects. But there's a huge military hardware machine out there. You know, that industry is trillions and trillions of dollars, and most of that is U.S. dollars. And so these types of deals that are made that actually in the long run wind up compromising our security, compromising our capability, and causing us to spend more to offset that. You know, again, those in charge of the military spending, unfortunately, a lot of times don't have a choice because they have to keep up with the Joneses, if you will. But when deals like that get cut, that puts us in a position where we don't have a choice. And, you know, those who are manufacturing these pieces of military hardware and weapons and so forth are counting on it.
Well, of course, people who engage in a lot of warfare spend a lot of money creating the munitions and the planes and all the other things that go along with warfare. I've always felt, why don't we just all play nice and be happy with our own country and not worry about invading another country or being invaded? That's just not going to happen, right?
Correct. I think I wish everyone could just play nice. You know, can't we all just get along, as John Lennon asked us once?
Oh, right, right.
And now, unfortunately, that's not the way
the
world
spins. Well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we all wish that was the case, but unfortunately, we're seeing these things happen, obviously, all around the world. And the key thing we have to keep in mind is that 90% of what we all buy, we go to Costco and we're looking for toilet paper, comes to us via sea routes, the sea lanes. And so I know it's difficult for us to look at all this money we're spending on the Navy and keeping our sea lanes free, but the downside of that is if we can't get goods to our shores across these sea lanes because they are compromised, then we are in long lines. And now we're complaining that we can't get all the stuff we want. So we can't have our cake and eat it too. We have to make sure we keep those sea lanes open.
Right. And, well, of course, then we have to go back to the 1970s when certain people in this country went to China and decided to well, outsource production of many of the things that we use on a daily basis to another country, which is really very stupid, but I think it was a corporate thing. Corporations like cheap labor, and that was arranged for this outsourcing, which has really hurt us a great deal. When you think of all the things that come from China, what would you say, 90% of the things that we use come from China?
You're not far off. And I think what's interesting is in my career, I've worked with a lot of companies that have gained some very significant manufacturing advantages with the maquiladora and Mexican labor
All right.
using Mexico. And yes, there's pluses and minuses. We can look to China and say there's more sophistication capability there. And certainly that's the case. But like you said, that wasn't the case back when. And it might have been a smarter move for us to stop and think for a minute that most likely, probably never likely, Mexico will be an adversary to the U.S. We're just not ever probably going to see a situation where they're pointing guns at us and trying to lock up sea lanes and all of these kinds of things. And so that is a catch-22.
Right.
We're now highly dependent upon those manufacturing sources and those labor sources. And by the way, a lot of that is a requirement now for a lot of the drugs that we have. So a lot of these drugs that we're now very concerned about in relation to COVID, they're manufactured in China. So we can't afford to cause some issues in our relationship there. Even though it looks like, without question, not only did it start there, but it probably started there in a bioweapons lab.
That was financed by Fauci.
Well, there you go. It all comes around, doesn't it?
You're right. And regarding Mexico, well, several corporations went down there and built plants and everything else. And then if there's all these plants down there where the Mexicans can work, why the heck are they coming north in order to do the jobs that, quote unquote, Americans won't do? And I think you also have to take into consideration the failure of the peso in 1996, which kind of helped the poor Mexicans to come north. Because even though there were a lot of corporations building firms down there, maybe the workers just weren't making enough, or they. Anyway, it didn't work out the way that we were told, or the way that the corporations thought that it would. And is that because of the failure of the peso? And who did that?
Well, that goes back to a lot of things that were going on within the Mexican government at the time, no doubt. But we also made some errors here. Again, when we provide a lot of attraction to come across the border and provide a lot of benefits and so forth at no cost, we may be better suited to look to, like you said, bolstering or putting some investment into manufacturing or other things south of the border that can help bolster the lifestyle there and make it less attractive to come across the border. And it's a win-win for everyone, right? So that may be a better strategy, but I think a lot of times we unfortunately don't have a lot of smart leaders who are looking to do that. We have self-serving folks who maybe
Right.
are a little short-sighted.
They also have those people in Mexico where you have just a relatively few people who are making a lot of money while the general population lives at a very low low standard. Wouldn't you agree with that or no?
Yes, no question. And corruption runs deep. That's always been a huge issue, and it still is. And you'll continue to see that until you have an opportunity to make some changes.
Until heck freezes over?
Well, maybe so.
Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
With you and me, it starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back with our first guest today, W. Craig Bill Reed. You don't like the name William.
William's fine,
but Bill is better.
Bill's better, right? So, and the truth is, I used to be Bad Bill, and now I'm just Sweet William. So, either one's fine.
In whose opinion?
Well, my wife thinks so, but
okay.
I hope I stay that way.
That's good enough. After Putin came to power, seized power, there was Project Hammer, and then BP Amoco became a very large investor in Russia in 1997, and it paid, that was before he came to power, but it's just very interesting that they came in and bought all the stuff up. Halliburton Energy Services entered in the country in 1998. And then you had all these foreign entities coming in and investing in oil. I mentioned Halliburton, of course. Halliburton gets, they have have a lot of interest everywhere, correct?
Correct. I think we're seeing a lot of globalization changes in relation to what's happened recently, but we're also seeing a number of agendas that are being moved forward, and certainly that's the case with Putin. He has long had a very strong desire to move the world away from what we call the petrodollar, which is using U.S. dollars energy trades. You know, that's been since Nixon took us off the gold standards in the early 70s. We've been using U.S. dollars. That's the deal we cut with Saudi Arabia. And that's caused a great deal of consternation for Russia and China, because we can basically dictate our political, geopolitical will on the world because of that, and cause sanctions to be quite onerous, as we saw with Ukraine. So Putin would like to move away from maybe make it more of a petro-ruble instead of a petrodollar.
Wow. Well, that doesn't bid well for Americans and their bank accounts.
It does not. And so you mentioned earlier, you know, what's next after the coronavirus? Well, that may be. And I talk about that in the book, The Spies of the Deep Book, in terms of what the devastating impact could be on the world if we take our eye off the ball. And it's easy to do under the circumstances, no doubt. But if we do that, then other entities may start to see an opportunity to move things here or there on the chessboard. And that could wind up being very devastating for us, far worse than what we're seeing economically today.
Okay, now haven't we used the military to enforce our will and to maintain the dollar superiority or power?
Well, no question. I know we were told that we invaded Iraq because of WMDs, weapons of mass destruction. And it was a WMD, but it was a weapon of mass desertion, because Saddam Hussein said, you know what, I'm going off the petrodollar, I'm going to take euros. And this was 2 years. This was when 2 years before the invasion. And we said, no, you're not. Go back on the petrodollar, use U.S. dollars. And he said, no, I'm not. 2 years later, we wheeled tanks across this desert in Iraq, went back onto the petrodollar. And we've seen this in Syria. We saw it with Muammar Gaddafi. You know, we've seen it everywhere. Anywhere any of these OPEC or oil-laden countries have even hinted at shifting from the petrodollar, all of a sudden something happens that keeps that from happening.
Yeah, I don't know why these countries seem to think that the resources within their countries should be for their benefit and for the citizens that live in their country. Isn't that rather narrow-minded?
Good point. And what is interesting is that now that more of the energy production is here in the U.S., we're less reliant on those countries. So perhaps that will lower the number of wars that need to be started overseas. But we're also seeing issues where, you know, we've seen it in Venezuela, where a country could be a petrol competitor, and all of a sudden overnight they're not.
Right. Well, that happens when you go in and slaughter a bunch of the citizens and kill the leader. It has a tendency to make political changes. I'm being facetious, of course.
That's one way to do it. there may be others that could be a little less devastating, but you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing, and there, and we've often heard, or at least I've heard that there's enough oil on the North Shore for the next 500 years. Why is it that we have to control oil in other countries, especially in the Middle East? Oh, we have a break. We'll be right back momentarily. Today is William Craig Reed, and we were talking. I brought up the oil on the North Shore, and could you comment on that, or would you like to?
So you're talking about oil up in the Arctic on the northern,
right.
Yes. This is definitely part of Putin's agenda, and he's made that very clear while he was invading Ukraine. With his left hand and his right hand, he was strong-arming the UN to allow Russia to have all the economic rights in the Sea of Okhotsk, trillions of dollars worth of oil and gas, and a huge, huge area. They call it the peanut hole, and they now own that. And so with ice melting and with new extraction technologies, that becomes, you know, quite lucrative to bolster their GDP. They also sent submarines and divers down to 14,000 feet up near the North Pole, and they used a submarine called the Le Shark, which we heard about in the news recently. That's the one that caught fire, that went out of commission, so that they could again prove to the UN they own all that area up there, all near and around the North Pole. Again, another trillion plus dollars worth of oil and gas and other minerals.
Wow.
That's his agenda, is to lock up these resources. He's cut big deals with China, building huge amounts of pipes. They currently control a third of the natural gas that feeds all of Europe through the pipes. And guess where those pipes run? Four of them run through Ukraine. So that's what really happened.
Oh, that's why he... Oh, yes, things are making sense. Wow. So really what we're saying is that the people who control the earth's resources are going to be calling the shots.
Well, they are for the time
being. They are calling the shots.
No doubt about it. Until we innovate, and I think that is the key. And we have those who are in economic control right now who would prefer that we don't innovate our way out of the energy sack. But there are firms, and I visited Naval Research Labs out in D.C., stone's throw away from all the congressmen and the senators. And they have a technology today that works. It's nascent, but it can convert ordinary salt water into any kind of fuel, rocket fuel, ship fuel, car fuel, and it is negative in its carbon effect. So it actually lowers the carbon. It pulls the carbon out of the ocean, 140 times more carbon in the ocean than the air. So it lowers our carbon footprint while it's creating gas. And yet I asked them, well, why isn't there a Manhattan Project behind this? And they said, Manhattan Project said, we can't even get a nickel. We have to go around with a tin can and a tin cup to try and get funding.
Oh, really? The people in Congress are saying they can't get any money from anyone?
The Naval Research Labs are saying they can't get funding from anybody to move this project forward. And it seems to me that if I'm an oil company, why wouldn't I do this? Because this could replace my upstream while my downstream stays the same. And I lower the cost of creating, instead of fracking and all these other expensive things.
Fracking is terrible. It's
right.
It's destroying the earth, and it's creating all kinds of problems. You have cave-ins where you can't extract all of what they extract. And they, what did they put in the water for fracking? It's just a big mess. Whoever thought that up should be shot or something.
Yeah,
it's a terrible thing to do to the earth.
Point being that we can innovate our way out of it, and we need to get past this thinking that if I'm outside of what I'm doing now, I'm in fear. It's working. I'm not going to rock that boat, so I'll fight everything that threatens what I have right now in my little world, instead of thinking that the world changes, people change, you have to change with it. You have to innovate your way out of this, find ways to innovate that allow you to be able to keep your revenue stream and maybe even be more profitable while you are not ruining the earth, or you are, you know, causing yourself to become a dinosaur, no pun intended.
Well, the corporations have been destroying the earth for quite a long time, fluoridating water and doing all kinds of things so that they poison streams, and they dig big holes in the earth and leave them uncovered. And I think that oil and gas they have a lot of lobbyists, and they contribute a lot to politicians, as does Big Pharma. And so is it a matter of the politicians aren't being paid enough to make these changes or to investigate these things? Are the wrong lobbyists working on
well,
them or what?
No question. I think the real answer is that they're being paid, if you will, or more importantly, funded.
Bribed
could be a better word for this. You want to stay in power, you want to stay in office, well, we'll help you do that, but you need to scratch our back. And that's just the way things have always been done. And until we move past the power of the lobbyists or the PACs, so to speak, we will continue to have those issues.
Yikes. Wow. That is just so sad that people don't consider that this is like we're destroying our home. We're destroying the very, well, I don't say we, they are destroying the very things that make life wonderful and abundant. And it's just very aggravating to see what the corporations are doing and getting away with, because they've got politicians in their pocket. And just ticks me off. I get ticked off really easily, though. when it comes to politics, I get really ticked off. Anyway, in Russia, there were a lot of things going on right before Putin came in, right after he came in, where you have all of these big companies going into Russia and taking over their oil and their gas. They took over the oil industry, BP Amoco, and all of these other, and Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney was he was a former Halliburton vice president, wasn't he? He was CEO at Halliburton. Dick Cheney.
That's correct. He was.
He was.
He resigned in order to run for vice president.
Oh, gee. That's really big of him.
But he kept $23 million, I want to say, in stock options.
Right. So, yeah. Yes. Exactly. And they arrested other people in Russia to get rid of them. What about Khodorkovsky? Are you familiar
yes.
with him?
Yes. So the way Putin wrested control is, you know, when the Kursk went down, he used that, leveraged that basically to wrest control from the oligarchs and threw a lot of them in jail through kangaroo courts and so forth, took over their oil companies, lined his own pocket, but then used that to reinvest into the military, especially build the naval military, lock up all the sea routes around Russia, most importantly the Northern Sea Route up in the Arctic.
Oh, right.
Now controls that area. But you had mentioned Project Hammer earlier, and back in 89, you know, that covert operation, that was multi-billion-dollar operation that Bush spearheaded, but that was actually very closely tied to the project I mentioned earlier. It's called Ivy Bells. And I actually write about that in the book. That was the one that used the saturation divers. We were wiretapping their communication cables. So it doesn't do you any good to have a multi-billion-dollar covert operation to bankrupt Russia if you don't know where to put the money. And that's what this intelligence gave us. We had an open channel to all of their private communications.
Oh.
Running between various different naval bases and other bases, and a lot of what was going on in the Soviet Union at that time, we could determine by this operation. Very top secret. That's really what broke their back, that intelligence. And then we could spend the billions where we needed to in various programs to bring the Cold War to a close.
Right. You had the CIA operating as they did in Vietnam and everywhere else. You have CIA operatives, correct?
That's correct. This was under the direction of CIA Director William Casey. And so
who was later killed very mysteriously.
Yeah, quite mysteriously.
Did he drown?
So we've been told.
Yeah, he fell off a boat somehow. And
Right, exactly.
Probably had a big bump on his head or something.
I'm sure.
Wow. Gosh. We never hear about this stuff on the evening news.
No, of course not. not at all.
And it seems that you first start out with George H.W. Bush, and he's the one that kind of initiated the Project Hammer program, and then you have George W. Bush, who comes in and continues the program, and it just seems like it's just a you just keep the baton is passed from one president to the next. What do you see? How do you feel about Trump? Some people think that, oh, he's great, he's wonderful, he's not going along with this program. And what are your views?
Well, what I tell people is that I have very close friends who I love dearly, and I have family members who I love dearly. I would not hesitate for a moment to call them on their stuff. Okay, if I saw clearly that for whatever the reason, they were making decisions, or, you know, if they were in some leadership capacity and they were, you know, doing anything that could cause some issues, especially when we're talking about people's lives, I would be obligated to at least bend their ear and not just cut them slack and say that everything they're doing is perfect, because that's just not realistic, you know, just so that, you know, if I had elected that person, et cetera. And again, these are close friends and relatives whom I love dearly, but I still would hold them accountable to do the right thing. And I think that if I were to say one thing to folks out there, it's okay, if you hate him, you know, let's get off the bandwagon already. Let's make sure we're holding people accountable. But come on, news media. Every single day we're hearing about all the bad things Trump does. I mean, let's take a leadership position to say, okay, Trump said this, and then we have these other experts that said this. Let's see if, you know, we can inform the public about what the facts are and allow them to make decisions. And if you love Trump, same thing. Don't just keep cutting him slack. Hold him accountable. And don't be saying to everybody, oh, well, you know, he said this, but. Well, no, he said that, and he probably shouldn't have, because people died from it. So let's hold him accountable as a leader and make sure that, you know, people aren't dying if there's some missteps. So that's all I'm saying. You know, just love him or hate him, doesn't matter. You should hold your leaders accountable.
Okay. Well, I think that's true for every politician. We should hold them accountable. But if they don't exactly ask our opinions, certainly we elect them. Well, what choice did we have? Let's see. We have Hillary or we have Trump. We have Hillary, we have Trump. It seems like like we didn't have a great deal of choice here, because I think a vote for Trump was a vote against Hillary. I think that's how he got in. And certainly he was a businessman. He'd done very well in Manhattan. He'd done, he's a billionaire. And I think that probably, I don't know. I think that to allow the country to be economically stilted, to cut down the entire economy of the country for a situation that involves a very, very small percentage of the population. The flu, here we go talking about COVID, the flu has killed more people annually than COVID-19. So why has he allowed the country to be shut down, and for people who are not ill, small business owners are going to lose their business. People are not going to be able to go back to their jobs because the jobs aren't going to be there anymore. And of course, it's been incremental. You had also the big box stores that came in, and then all of a sudden there was no more Penny's, there was no more Sears in certain areas, and the people that worked in those stores were people, ordinary people. Maybe they had a high school diploma. They were just normal, ordinary people, and all of a sudden their job was gone. Now we're talking 20 years ago, 10 years ago. So it seems incremental that our economy is being attacked, and we'd all like to know why. We, at least I would. Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back. ¶¶ Alrighty, we are back with our guest, Bill Reed, and he is an author. He's written lots and lots of books. You may visit his website at wcraigreed.com, and I'll post that in the chat room so that people can find you. You have a lot of interesting things on your website. Anyway, I was complaining right before we went to break, and I'm a good complainer, but with all these people out of a job, and Trump, he's done enough good things that you might say, well, look, you know, maybe he just hasn't gotten around to that particular issue. But how do you feel about all these people being out of work? And it's been incremental, and you can also include NAFTA in this whole scenario with people being out of work, jobs outsourced, productions outsourced. How can he bring that all back, even though he has indicated that was his intention, was to return production to this country? That's a lot of statements to have you respond to.
Definitely.
I'm just griping.
You know, we are in a tough situation, and I think you know, we can certainly look back in time and point a lot of fingers, and maybe we should, so we can learn from it. But you know, could we, should we have been prepared years ago? And the answer is yes. There were a number of flags raised, lots of yellow and a few red flags raised years ago, that this is the sort of thing that could happen. And you know, let's be honest, the whole world, U.S. included, got caught with our pants down, and we were not prepared at all for this scenario. And so there were reactions. Were there some overreactions? Certainly. Difficult one. I know a lot of folks are, you know, strongly opinionated about, you know, should we stay completely hunkered down and not go out and do anything, versus should we be completely open with no masks and we go out and kiss each other in public, or somewhere in between. And the problem is children. And I'm not talking about just infecting children. I'm talking about adolescent minds. Now, unfortunately, and again, I wrote about this ad nauseum in my leadership book, because of our unfortunate, unhealthy lifestyles, which we're seeing now, very high degree of us have type 2 diabetes, very high degree are obese, very high degree this and that and other things. And neuroscience tells us that it dramatically impacts our cognitive abilities and our ability to think and act rationally. And so the problem is that COVID can potentially be a loaded gun. Now, yeah, it may be, you know, 100 cylinders and only one bullet, but there's still a loaded gun. And love to be able to trust everyone to be able to go out into the public with a loaded gun and be responsible and reasonable with it. But unfortunately, we're seeing that's not the case. Wherever we have opened up completely, people are sitting right next to each other and rubbing hands and kissing each other. And that's like sending a bunch of adolescents out into the playground with loaded guns and saying, please don't shoot anybody.
Right. Wow. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We will be right back. Our guest the first 2 hours today is W. Craig Reed. He's the author of many books. The one in particular that I'm very interested in addition to the one that's coming out in July, Spies of the Deep, is the one that we were referring to, the one that you referred to right before we went to the break, The Seven Secrets of Neuron Leadership. And you talk about, well, one of the things you say, if you think you can do a thing. Well, you didn't say it, but Henry Ford said it. If you think you can do a thing, or think you can't do a thing, you're right. And certainly that's true. I have a T-shirt that's with an image of a brain. It says, "Use it or lose it," and I think that's true. And I think that you're also looking at the health, the general health of people in this country. You mentioned diabetes. You mentioned, there's a lot of people that are overweight, a lot of people who are incredibly ill. And when you're ill, and you have epidemics. You have epidemics of ADHD. You have epidemics of Alzheimer's. All these epidemics going around. And the things we take into our bodies, Diet Coke and all this other stuff, you just have to sit back and think, my gosh, if we can't take care of our own physical environment, how are we expected to be responsible for the Earth's environment? Your comments.
No question about it. Well, and what's interesting is that the neuroscience now tells us where we should be. So we've all heard about Myers-Briggs and DISC or Strengths Finders, all these different personality profile tests and so forth, so we know kind of who we are. Well, unfortunately, none of those are based on any science at all, actually. It's just observational. We think people are a certain way. Well, neuroscience now tells us that certain neurotransmitters and chemicals in our brain have a direct correlation to not only our personalities, but to our health in general. A good friend of mine, a PhD neuroscientist, says where your brain goes, your body follows. And what we're seeing is that if we are not feeding our bodies correctly, it affects our mental health.
Of course.
Right? And that is really the problem. We're saying, okay, why aren't we electing better leaders? Well, maybe because we had 16 donuts before we went to the polls.
Right. Or maybe we're dehydrated. There are people in this country who don't recognize the necessity of drinking water.
No question about it. Yeah.
Your brain is 85% water, or at least 70%. It's and if you're not drinking any water and you're severely dehydrated and you can't think straight, and I don't know. It's just really, really pretty awful. We do have a caller. Let's see what Tim in Washington has to say. Tim, you have a question?
Yeah, it's for Mr. Reed. Mr. Reed, it's pretty much an undisputable fact that the great and mighty king of Mother Russia, Vladimir Putin, is probably the most, probably the greatest statesman in the last 40 years that probably deserves at least two, maybe three Nobel Peace Prizes. And I just wanted to establish that this is the legacy of the man that brought Russia back. Would you not agree?
Well, no question. It's a two-edged sword. A lot of people think he's a dictator, but his profile is actually more of a protector. Very strong and in control. And yes, he was a KGB colonel. And so he does and has used very ruthless ways to get the job done. Can we say that it was required? Perhaps. But you are right. In utilizing some of these very, in some cases, ruthless tactics, but also very shrewd chess player. He thinks 6-8 moves ahead, no question. He's a very smart man in that respect, and he does deserve some credit for bringing Russia back from the ashes. They were really in a bad situation, inherited a huge amount of debt from the Soviet Union, and he brought them back into much higher GDP and had reserve funds, et cetera, to weather the storms and some of the sanctions. And he's still moving that country forward, and he may be in power with the laws being changed by him until he dies. We'll see.
And yeah, that's what they say all the way up until, right. He got rid of the oligarchs. He rebuilt 25,000 Russian Orthodox churches. He opened up the land to anybody of, all they had to do was have some kind of Russian heritage name, and he gave them land in over there in Siberia for organic farms, diversified the economy, and then of course he stopped because of his presence in Syria. He stopped the full-on invasion of both by Turkey and the United States. I mean, he brokered out. Basically, he should get the Nobel Peace Prize at least twice. And then he was the one that wiped out Al-Qaeda or ISIS, them and the Iranians. They really put it to him. It wasn't the United States. But no, I mean, he's an incredible nationalist. I mean, if only we had somebody like him. And then my other point is that, you know, the construct, I'm sure you know the construct of the Earth, particularly right there in the Bering Strait, that there's only like 59 miles between Siberia and Alaska, with a big giant island actually in the middle. And so a simple pair of 6 or 8 lane railroad tunnels, 25 miles, would connect up. A pair of them would connect up, and you could actually have a Eurasian type of rail bridge, which would be an incredible rebate, and that would actually bring Russia and the United States into a partnership, really, that would rule the world, because all the commerce would go through there instead of over the oceans. Have you ever thought about that, that project? Have you heard of that?
I have, actually. Wrote about that particular area in the Spies of the Deep book, and also part of what the plan is. And Putin has locked up that entire northern sea route that goes all the way from Europe all the way down past through the Bering Strait, and we've done nothing. So we've got basically a knife and a gunfight up there right now, and we're now sending our warships up there to do what's called a freedom of navigation operation, a FONOP, which is could be seriously backfiring. And so we're going in the opposite direction is what I'm saying here. Whereas we probably should explore more of these cooperative things and narratives where we may be able to financially benefit from working together versus let's spend gazillions of dollars to fight each other up in the Arctic. And that kind of seems where we're headed right now.
Yeah, well, he's been a major stopgap against the global elite. You know, what people call the one world order. He's made it more of a bipolar world. But I just wanted to correct you also on one thing. He never did invade the Ukraine. The Ukraine for 1,000 years was actually part of Russia and was only given autonomy by Khrushchev on his birthday, because Khrushchev was from the Ukraine. But the only thing that he did do was in Donbass and Lombask, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, is he prevented the Russian-speaking people there in eastern Ukraine from being genocided. So he never did roll tanks. He never invaded. The only thing he did was reinforce his position there in the Black Sea at that, what's the port? You would know it. The Black Sea port, the
Crimea.
Crimea, yeah. So I just wanted to get that straight, that he never invaded. He never rolled tanks into Ukraine and, you know, tried to take it over and all the rest of that. So I just wanted to get that straight. He was not the aggressor. In fact, we're the aggressor. In fact, the whole reason he had to help out eastern Ukraine is that the way they would have been genocided off, but also a unified Ukraine would have actually qualified for NATO, and that would have moved our missiles batteries from Poland all the way up to the Ukraine-Russian border, and then we would have missile batteries sitting, I think Moscow's only like, 200 miles away? So he had to do what he had to do. And as far as him being ruthless, Yeah, he's probably killed a lot of journalists, but they, most of them were traitors, like what we see here. We have traitors all around us.
Bill, don't
all
go
our
to
journalists.
Russia.
Don't plan.
Well,
to.
No, I mean he didn't. I mean, we what we ought to do in the United States is we actually put them on trial, and then hang them. But we have a massive amount of traitors in Russia. Instead of letting them metastasize and rip up and destroy his country, he just offed them. He just saved, you know, he saved Russian taxpayers the trial. But he's not a ruthless killer. He just doesn't go around just killing people to kill. He's got to have a reason. But,
well, no, no
yeah,
question.
I think
you know, George is an example of some things that maybe were a bit over there. But I agree with you in terms of Ukraine. CIA actually was backing the annexation, if you will, of Ukraine becoming a NATO country. And no question, Putin had to move. You think of him as a bulldog. And if you poke him with a stick enough, he's going to bark back and bite. And that's what he did, because, again, he's got to protect the four pipes feeding the EU and doesn't want missiles. Same kind of situation where we weren't going to accept missiles in Cuba. He wasn't going to accept them in Ukraine. And also that seaport, Crimea, a very strategic seaport. Well, that would have made that seaport compromised. So
he had to have that.
Quite a number of reasons, yeah.
Yeah, you had to have the pipelines. That was the economic lifeline. I mean, if you take a look from his perspective, I mean, he's taken a look around, and since the Cold War ended, the agreement was that NATO wouldn't move any further past East Germany. And we'll look what we've done. We're just moving everything right up to his border. You know, no one of the guys, you know. And he actually called a meeting of the Journalist International, and he goes, "Y'all are not covering this. They're putting missiles in Poland. They're moving everything up. What do you think that I'm going to do?" He says, "Don't you understand that these are not conventional missile batteries? They can be traded out for nuclear missile batteries." And he says, "You all are not seeing what's going on, what I am being forced to do." And he's basically telling them, "Look, I'm getting ready to blast the crap out of them. You need to get on this and put some political pressure through the media, you know, because you could see it in his voice, you could hear him, you know. And this guy's got an arsenal. I mean, anyways, yeah, okay, Mr. Reed. Well, thank you. And what was your book? Your particular the one that dealt with Russia. What is the name?"
It's called Spies of the Deep, and it's out now on pre-order, and it'll be out shipping in July.
Spies of the Deep by, was it Philip Reed or Craig Reed?
W, period, stands for William W. Craig Reed.
W. Craig Reed. Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure I got the correct title. Okay, thank you, Deanna, for taking my call. I do appreciate
Alrighty.
It.
All righty. Thank you, Tim.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alrighty. So let's talk about your book that is coming out, and particularly about this tragedy, which, well, anytime a group of people are submerged and die and it's a tragedy. It doesn't matter whether they're, it doesn't matter who they are. It's, death is a tragedy, especially in a submarine. We do have another caller. So why don't you mull that over? Let's take this other caller, Jim in Kansas.
Does the United States have something similar to RT in Russia?
Okay.
What is your question?
Does the United States have something similar to what RT is in the United States, where people in Russia can click on and see all this info that's similar to, well, I mean, you know, I really enjoy some of the stuff I see on RT.com. That's my question. I'll hang up and let you talk about it if he knows anything about that. Bye.
Thank you.
So he's talking Russia about today. RT.com, the
Russia Today, yeah.
Russia Today, yeah. So, and so is he saying, do people in Russia have something similar to that, or people in the U.S. have something similar to that?
If people in Russia have something like that, in other words, are they precluded from knowing what is going on? Are they interested, or do they know under the in which situation they're living, if they're informed, or are they programmed like the people in this country?
Understood. I had the privilege of visiting St. Petersburg. Gosh, it's been about a decade ago now, and I was writing Red November. And what I can say is that you've got two different generations. You've got the Soviet Union generation, and then you have the more, call it millennial, younger generation. And the more older generation, not as informed and not as savvy, obviously, in terms of their internet capability and being able to find various different sites and know how to get around blockage with VPNs and things of that nature. And so they're not as up to speed on the truth and don't have access to things like RT. However, younger generation, I met one couple who really helped me quite a bit with my research. Both of them had two degrees, advanced degrees, and both of them worked two jobs. And they brought me over to their apartment inside this building that was completely run down and fallen apart.
Really?
It was no bigger than their room was no bigger than a dorm, and they had a shared bathroom with several other families, and yeah, they didn't have a TV. They used their computers, but they were incredibly computer savvy, VPNs, knew how to get around things, and were very up to speed on what was really going on out in the world. And I would say they were actually quite a bit more informed than the average college student in the U.S. Sorry to say. But they would never allow any professor to tell them how to think or how to act. I was extremely impressed with these two young individuals. Really nice, very sharp, and not at all entitled or spoiled, obviously, in any way. Very grateful for everything that they had in life. Gosh, I think some of our young people could learn a lesson from these two.
Very interesting. When, what year was it that you were there?
2010.
Okay, so and they were living in what would be considered squalor here.
Yes, absolutely. You know, no college student today would put up with this. And yet they had four jobs between them.
Was that typical? Is that typical?
Or was very it typical. I asked them that question. They said yes. And I got to go around the city and tour the city and meet a bunch of people, and also spent quite a bit of time talking to others about other areas of Russia and Russian experts and so forth that I interviewed. And yes, that's very much the way it is, really across most of Russia. And even today, it's still quite a bit that way.
How about the elites? Do they live in squalor? We'll be right back.
Of course not.
We'll be right back.
With you and me, we all can be heroes if we take the lead.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. I really like that commercial. And it's so funny when John says, shoot him an email after he's been talking about guns. I think, it's so clever. Did he say that on purpose? Or is it just the way it came out? Anyway. Uh-huh. It's kind of funny. When we went to the break, we were talking about the couple that was living in squalor. And I'm just, and of course, the elites don't live like that. And it seems in every country, that the elites, the politicians, they're all doing very well. Corporate owners are doing very well. But the typical people, the ordinary people, whether they're well-educated or not, unless they have the interesting connections, do not live the same, do not have the same standard of living.
Yes, no question about it. And I think, unfortunately, that's the case in a lot of different areas in the world. And, you know, we can point to a lot of reasons for that. But I think what it really comes down to is that, you know, you have the, we call it the haves and the have-nots.
Right.
But I think a lot of that has to do, I pointed back to the brain science earlier, if we do a better job of taking care of our bodies and our brains, we give ourselves a better fighting chance. We give ourselves a better opportunity to get ourselves out of that, to have less lethargy and more drive and energy and things of that nature, and just, you know, more caring.
Right. Yeah, that book, The Seven Secrets of Neuron Leadership, looks incredibly interesting. And you pointed out all the, I don't shop at Walmart, but if I did go to Walmart, I'm sure that I would see a cross-section of the people that you're talking about. Or if I went to any big box store or any store, you think, my gosh, little kids that weigh 100 pounds when they're six, and you think, my gosh, what are their parents feeding this child? Children are now tied to their games or video games. And when I was a child, I was out running around. I probably put on 5 or 6 miles a day, just running around, going to the park, just being active like any little kid is. And so we're just we're getting a bad start. Some of the children are getting a really bad start, and it does affect our choices. As you said, you don't eat a dozen donuts and then go to the polls and vote.
Absolutely. You know, a wonderful site that actually uses the knowledge and the wisdom and the incredible input from those I interviewed in the book, and the science, the neuroscience that's in the book, is called Remotely Me, remotelyme.com. And they do a wonderful job of helping us to understand what's going on with our brains and also avoid some of the things we shouldn't be putting into our body, and maybe substitute some things. You know, some great information on COVID-19 there as well, but that's been really a real blessing for me to be able to, well, it's kind of cool to see them using the stuff that I publish, but also just helping people in general to do a better job of understanding what we're doing. And a lot of things, I thought I was doing a pretty good job with my diet and so forth, and realized that after reading a bit more and getting more educated that I probably wasn't.
Right. One of the things I understand that Russia, the leadership there, has not allowed Monsanto to come in with their Roundup and all of their poisons. Is that true, or do you know?
Yes, that's I have heard that, and they've also done a pretty good job of keeping some suspect investments being made there. And I have to say that a lot of other countries do a much better job than we do. And I'm going to take a pot shot at the FDA.
Please, because, be my guest.
You know, gosh, I thought that agency was around to help us stay healthier. Just the opposite seems to be true, that you know, they always badmouth supplements, and they say they're bad, but nobody dies taking supplements, whereas thousands of people die taking things that the FDA approved. I rest my case on that one. But I think a lot of other countries are doing a much better job than some of our government agencies in not allowing those with big pockets to simply kill people so they can have bigger pockets.
Right. And of course, all the ABC agencies were created for the profitability and the convenience of corporations. And a lot of times people think, well, the FDA tests all this stuff and they're out there to protect us. And that's just not true at all. Okay, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will return shortly. W. Craig Reed, and he has written a lot of books, and we've talked about a few of them. And a little bit ago, I talked about, or I referred to, an incident with a submarine in your book that is coming out in July. And the one that's coming out in July is Spies of the Deep, the untold story about the most terrifying incident in submarine naval history and how Putin used the tragedy to ignite a new Cold War. So could you tell us a bit about the tragedy?
Yes. So in August of 2000, the Kursk went down. And when I first heard about this, I had nightmares for weeks because years earlier during the Cold War aboard a submarine that I was on, and I wrote about this in the Spies of the Deep book, we were deep inside a, at that time, Soviet harbor doing an espionage operation, and maybe a mile off their coast. We were not supposed to be there, obviously. And we accidentally ran into a Russian submarine.
Whoops.
Came right up underneath it, crushed our sail like a beer can. We had flooding, and we spent 3 days trying to get out of the area while they were depth charging us and shooting torpedoes at us. We called it a Cold War. For us, that was very, very hot. And we came within a breath of not coming home on that mission. Quite a few on that submarine came back with PTS. And so when I heard about the Kursk going down, it brought those memories back to me. And regardless of which flag they fly, and whether or not we, you know, were once quote-unquote enemies, I could not help but feel an affinity for the 23 survivors who were trapped on that submarine 350 feet deep. And I heard so many things being said that I knew could not be true. Being a submariner, knowing what I knew about the Navy and knowing how rescue operations happen, deep submerged rescue vehicles, on and on, I knew we were being lied to. There's just no question in my mind. And I knew that the truth needed to come out. There were some books published a few years later that did not expose any of this. I knew that we had a couple of submarines out there because I knew some of the people who knew people on those boats. But nobody talked. And it took 20 years for people to finally come forward who were on those submarines, the Toledo and Memphis, and others who were in the know, and also some of the rescue divers involved. They were British and Norwegian, and their supervisors and other government officials. Mark Medish, who was Clinton's advisor for Russian, and his interpreter, by the way, on calls with Putin. People like that finally came forward. I was able to talk with them. Russians finally divulged the truth, and all of it came out. I have to tell you, I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked at what the truth really is, what really happened, and how that has positioned us into this new Cold War we're in today.
Wow. I cannot imagine the feeling that you must have felt, or anybody that's in that situation, that would be the worst. Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry. We do have a caller, Ed, in Utah. Ed?
Yes, welcome. Deanna?
Yes, yeah, welcome.
Very good. What an intriguing show this is. Mr. Reed, I was going to talk to you about, mostly about Vladimir Putin, again, like that Washington caller, some of your comments early in the show, but he echoed my sentiments and stole my thunder there. I just want to concur with him that Vladimir Putin is one adult on the stage, and he did keep American war out of Syria. And I'm going to say American on the wrong side over there, because you've talked about the media here a little bit. Most of our media is owned and controlled by people that are connected to Israel, Sheldon Adelson and different people. These are the people that, again, are keeping a lot of misinformation about COVID-19, which is what I wanted to direct a comment at you on. A lot of the RBN listeners here, and I'm one of them, we're not buying into the high numbers that we're hearing. As a matter of fact, the Imperial College estimated 2.2 million Americans would die. Once Donald Trump did the emergency funding or the emergency declaration on Friday the 13th of March, all but right off the bat, they revised their numbers down to like a couple hundred thousand here and to 20,000 in England. This shows you right there that they were lying from the start, that they had an agenda, and you kind of confirmed it, Mr. Reed, when you talked about all this realignment of strategizing on world resources and what have you going on around the world with Putin. Putin is looking out for the interests of Russia. Putin, like that caller said, has built up the Orthodox Church in Russia. He's doing Christian things that Christian Americans only dream of and thought they had and may have to some extent with Donald Trump. But Donald Trump is, he's got the horse collar on him from these very people, Israel firsters and world takeover people, New World Order crowd, and what have you, Mr. Reed, that still have a stranglehold. And now they're going to push it to the umpth degree on the last of the working class of Main Street and still back up this Wall Street cabal. That's what I think is going on. We don't have the deaths. Medicare has been involved in the inflation of the deaths. Even some of the Undertakers associations out in Pennsylvania have proven that. They're lying, Mr. Reed, about the number of deaths. And they're using that to fear people into six-foot social distancing, which is nothing more than Pavlovian obey these madcap rulers. What do you say to all that, sir?
Well, can't speak to the validity of the numbers. What I can say is that I have personal friends who are no longer with us, who were taken by COVID. So I do know that all of the deaths are not faked. And personally, been impacted by this. And I have to scratch my head over the reasons why anyone would want to keep the lockdown if they didn't have to, because eventually we're going to start rolling toward bankruptcy if we don't. And so, and we're seeing some of the openness come about, and I'm sure there's a lot of different political reasons why, you know, we're going one way or the other. But, you know, in terms of whose agenda is getting pushed where, we have to keep in mind that there's competing agendas everywhere. And so if we see something happening on the left side of the fence or the right side of the fence or the middle side of the fence, there, it's being opposed by someone, and really comes down to is who wins out. Right. I don't disagree in terms of our mainstream media just completely either missing the big picture, not talking about things, you know, putting up who they want for. It really comes down to getting eyeballs and making money is the bottom line. But I always, you know, when I hear the word agenda, I have to say, okay, well, whose agenda is it? Who's going to benefit from it? And then who would be opposed to that? And let's think 6, 8, 10 chess moves ahead. And where would that go? In almost every case, you can draw a straight line back to somebody's pocket getting lined as to what an agenda might or might not be pushing for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mr. Reed, one last thing. You're very fair-minded, extremely intelligent. I would submit to you probably somebody you know of, the former CBS reporter, John Rappaport. You know who I'm
talking
about.
Yes, yes,
yes. Yeah. Well, you can check him out at nomorefakenews.com. And he took that name long before the Trump era, by the way. And he has, in my words, or in my mind, has rightly divided the truth from the bull on this COVID operation. He calls it Operation COVID-19 for the other agendas that you speak of as a cover, as a bait and switch. So John Rappaport, to me, is my hero, if I had a single hero, in unearthing the truth of this whole matter. But you, what you brought to the table here today is extremely, very good food for thought, and I do intend on reading your book.
Well, thank you. Most appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you, Deanna, for having him on. And for you, Deanna, bringing up a lot of your points earlier about the lockdown, the real motives behind this, and what I say, this six-foot distancing and all this, that is Pavlovian. That is the tenets of totalitarianism on American shore.
Well, thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. There are 15 billionaires who own America's news media companies. So I think that we are going to get their opinions rather than the opinions of, it used to be, 87 different entities that produced news. And then during the Reagan administration, he got rid of the Fairness Doctrine, in addition to a lot of other things. And so now you have a very small select group of billionaires who run the news. Oh, we have another caller. Did you want to respond to what Ed said before we take Dave in Nevada?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, Dave in Nevada, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Deanna. I just wanted to relate just some of my experience with a Russian friend of mine, what he told me about living in Russia. He was born there. And apparently, there's a contingent of, kind of a large contingent of Koreans. I don't know if you know that in Russia. We would talk about Vladimir Putin. And I told him that there's kind of like this cult following of people who, I guess, kind of in the patriot movement, who like Vladimir Putin for whatever reason. And so I just kind of told him what he thought about that. And he kind of laughed at that because he says Vladimir Putin is, he told me he was basically a gangster of sorts. I don't remember exactly what his argument was, but he kind of laughed at the idea that Putin was some kind of savior or whatever. And he said that living in, if you have a small business in Moscow, the Gestapo, they basically show up to your door where your shop or whatever your business is, and they ask for a tribute every month. It's like it's the government. And they basically come to your business, they ask for a hand. And I said, are you kidding me? He said, no. So that's what he told me. And that's from his direct firsthand experience about living in Russia. And the other thing is, the other issue is that I've done a little bit of research on Vladimir Putin's background. And I believe that he's Jewish on his mother's side. And there's this kind of belief that Vladimir Putin is kind of like at odds with the Jews in Israel. But I've actually seen him, video and footage of him hanging out with Jews and lighting menorahs. And that does not strike me as terribly anti-Semitic. The third point that I wanted to make is that it's pretty well known his wealth is astronomical. He's worth about $200 billion with a B. And that makes him like the equivalent of Warren Buffett and Jeff Bezos put together. He takes a cut out of every trade deal that comes to Russia, like every international trade deal, this guy is loaded. He has a house in the Black Sea. It's called Putin's House. It's worth $1 billion. And it looks like the Pentagon. So, I mean, this is kind of the stuff that I've done, like the research that I've done. I mean, other people might have, like, a dispute about that. But, I mean, my first thing is really just what my friend told me about his experience in living in Russia. So I don't know if you want to respond to that.
Yes, I do agree that Putin, as I mentioned, has helped propel Russia back to, you know, far better GDP and personal GDP for each of the citizens there. And he had at one point a very high approval rating. But, you know, there's a light and a dark side to the man, no question about it.
Right.
He did come from meager beginnings. So, as I mentioned, his father was a submariner. So he came from meager beginnings. And he actually, when he was very young, was a judo champion in his sambo, actually, in his town. And he went to the KGB and tried to get them to recruit him. They told him to go away and get a law degree and never talk to them again. Well, he did that. And then they approached him. And he became a KGB colonel. He was involved in his earlier days in a very questionable scandal worth millions, actually. And not only did he not lose his job, he very astutely found a way to get out of it, get around it, and get promoted for it.
Right.
So a very shrewd player. You cannot underestimate this man. Very strong, controlling type personality. And the problem we have today is that as much as we might love a particular candidate or have certain issues that are important to us, whatever they might be, and they may be good ones, we cannot place the world geopolitical position of this country below some of these other personal agenda things that we think might be important, because all those other things go away if we don't stand tall to that type of person. We saw it in Syria, no question, with Obama. You know, sorry to say, love or hate Obama, that was a huge political mistake, because Putin, when you back down, he sees you as a coward, and he will absolutely use you like a doormat. That's just the way he is. He did it in Georgia. He'll do it anywhere you allow him. So you must stand strong and tall against this person, or you'll get overrun. And so whoever we elect now going forward, stop and think hard about who we're going to elect. And, you know, back in our election with Hillary Clinton and Trump, that those are the only two we heard about. They got 98% of the media, again, controlled by 18 multi-billionaires. And I'm not saying this is the perfect candidate, but there was a candidate called Jim Webb we never heard about, who had a silver star and bronze stars, Purple Heart, and geopolitical expertise. Never even heard about him.
Wow. All righty, we're going to a quick break. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is W. Craig Reed. He is an author, and I really recommend that you purchase his book, or at least pre-purchase it, Spies of the Deep. And I have a copy. You can't see it, but I'm holding it up. I have a copy of this book. It is an advanced reader copy. And I feel very privileged that I have one. And the rest of you will have to wait until July. So I appreciate having that copy. And the other book too that I'm very impressed with is one about the way that people behave according to the way that they take care of their bodies. And that looks just really fascinating, The Seven Secrets of Neuron Leadership. And that's available at the A site, which we all like to, which we use. We don't like to, but sometimes it's, well, people can buy direct from you, Bill?
No, not at this point, but you can go up to anywhere where books are sold, which would be Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and just type in Spies of the Deep. Or you could go to my website, and you'll find the links there, wcraigreed.com. Get more information there on that book and other upcoming books and blogs and fun, cool stuff.
Great. Okay. What is your response to our last caller? He had some very interesting things to say, and I must say I do have a person that I've talked to in Russia several times over the years that says that pretty much the same leadership qualities, the same leadership, the people behind the leaders in Russia are the same people behind the leaders here. And he lives there. And anyway, what are your thoughts about what Dave said?
Well, we're getting two sides of the coin on Putin, aren't we? We have those that that apparently think he's the greatest leader in history, and others who may be a little less. I think, you know, Putin, as I'd mentioned, and the same with a lot of the leaders that we see, there's good, bad, and ugly. And it's with any leader, as I mentioned in my leadership book, there are certain qualities that we look for in true leadership. One of the most important that neuroscience and also psychologists have discovered becomes diminished as people rise in power is the ability to care and have empathy.
All right.
It's actually diminished in the brain. And unfortunately, that's what we see with a lot of leaders. CEOs get that way. But there's a movement called conscious capitalism. It was started by co-founders, one in particular of Whole Foods, and then also of Trader Joe's, Doug Rausch. And they did a study on hundreds, really, of public companies here in the U.S. and found that those companies that care, that have their, where their leaders care and have empathy, are 11 times more profitable on Wall Street. So two dictators of the world, start caring about your people and you'll actually have higher GDP.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been excellent. Really.
Let's do this again sometime.
No question.
All righty. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All righty. We'll be right back.